It's not quite a Christmas light ceremony, but it's the COVID equivalent. The new traffic light system will light up orange across most of the country on Friday, with just Auckland and 10 other North Island regions starting at red. Then Northland, Taupo, Rotorua, Kawerau, Whakatane, Aputiki, Gisborne, Wairoa, Rangitike, Whanganui and Ruapehu. The rest of the country, including the whole of the South Island, will begin at the orange traffic light setting. Nowhere starts at green and nowhere will go green until at least after the summer holidays. Jacinda Ardern says Cabinet is taking a cautious approach.
At orange, the big change here for parts of the country that will enter into this setting is that for the vaccinated and where vaccine passes are used, there are no gathering limits. People can gather again safely. At red, it will feel a lot like level two. Your vaccine pass lets you go everywhere, but number limits of 100 will apply to most activities. And importantly, because I know this is a question many Aucklanders have, you can now see family and friends again in their homes and use the bathroom inside. Luxury.
Cabinet will review the settings in 2 weeks' time on Monday, December the 13th. And joining me now is Deputy Prime Minister Grant Robertson. Tēnā koe, Minister.
Kia ora, Lisa.
What vaccination rate did you use to determine the orange setting specifically?
So there wasn't a specific vaccination rate used. We looked at vaccination rates across New Zealand, along with other issues, including the volume of people that might be moving around during the summer break, health system-related issues and so on. And so it wasn't a specific rate. Having said that, most people will be able to see that the areas where we have kept into the red level, are ones where vaccination rates, generally speaking, are lower. There's one or two minor exceptions to that, particularly if you're trying to compare perhaps the west coast of the South Island with the Rangitike district, but there are quite different circumstances at play there. So I don't think it'll be unexpected to the people in these regions, the areas where not only are the vaccination rates lower, but we've signalled that we want to see them lift.
So most zones in red are under 80% vaccinated and most zones in orange are 80% plus. Would that be a fair assessment?
That happens to be factually true, yes, but I'm not saying that 80% is a trigger.
Okay, so where's the reward for Auckland, right? The three DHBs, 86%, 87%, 91%, and you're looking at Taranaki, which has got only an 80% vaccination rate, and they're better off in terms of their traffic light setting.
Yeah, well, first things first, which is that when Auckland does go into the red level on Friday, it will feel quite different to what they've been through. It's akin to level two, if you're using vaccination certificates. And obviously we have a significant outbreak in Auckland, and therefore that is part of our thinking to see how that outbreak goes. We appear to have plateaued in the cases, but we want to lock in those gains. And so it's not just the vaccination rate, but equally, while level red has some restrictions in it, it will certainly feel significantly freer than what Auckland's been through recently.
Can Auckland realistically be orange before Christmas?
Well, we're not ruling that out, but we have a reassessment on the 13th of December and we'll take a look and see where Auckland is at. Obviously, with vaccination rates, as you're indicating, they've gone incredibly well and we want to see all of the second doses that people need to happen. And then we'll be looking at the state of the outbreak in Auckland, particularly at that point. So that's our check-in and we'll make that announcement.
Would case numbers need to be? Because as you've identified, one of the highest vaccination rates, we know that there's still space in ICU and hospital services. So case numbers seem to be the sticking point. What level do they need to get down to make you comfortable for orange?
And again, we haven't specified that and we will reassess.
So how do we know in Auckland if we're any closer? Do you see what I mean? We don't actually have a checklist that we can go through and say, okay, we've done this, this and this, so we get orange.
Yeah, and Aucklanders have done incredibly well here, but we are carefully stepping through this. There is still a significant outbreak in Auckland, and we'll look at all the factors, the health system, as you mentioned, the number of cases, the rates of vaccinations and second doses. So I'm not going to put a specific number on it. Red will be a significant step forward for Aucklanders, and then there'll be, 10 days or 11 days of that and a reassessment, and we'll see where we are at that point.
Why does the west coast of the South Island get to be in orange when they're only 77% dosed? Why don't you keep them in red and give them an incentive to get moving?
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously on the West Coast, we're talking about a very small number in real number terms. I think it's around about 500 people left to go to get down to get to the 90% first dose.
But it's all relative when you're dealing in percentages, isn't it?
It is, but as I say, also there are other factors at play here. There is not so much through traffic down on the west coast of the South Island. It obviously has a completely different situation in terms of case numbers and so on. And so we made the judgment that it could go with the rest of the South Island and move through to the orange level. I do think it's really important, Lisa, to understand that the red level, while it has some restrictions around gathering size in particular, does still offer people the ability to be able to do most of the things that they would be wanting to do over the summer period.
The Auckland border opens up on the 15th of December. Why bother having people in different regions and different colours when we're all going to be mixing and mingling?
Well, again, because should there be outbreaks, things like gathering restrictions, as they have throughout the pandemic, are helpful to limiting the spread of the virus. And, you know, that's why we don't have those big mass events in areas where we feel that, you know, the circumstances don't warrant going into orange.
So what is R&V going to cost the taxpayer?
Well, obviously, R&V organisers have got to make their own decisions about what they do if they do choose to not go ahead with it at this point.
Well, they can't go ahead unless they're in orange, right? So
Correct. That's
the scenario. At the moment, their district is in red and they are sitting at 74% second doses. So, you know, odds on, what's the likelihood that they're going to get to orange?
Well, again,
before
those are not decisions that we've made today. But if I was just going to finish the answer, that obviously if there are deadlines that Rhythm and Vines have got, that's why the event support system was set up for costs that they can't get back. And obviously I don't know what those costs would be at the moment, but the scheme was designed to support people in the circumstances they're in.
Ballpark, you must have a bit of an idea of how much you're up for if R&V doesn't go ahead. What is it?
No, I don't have those numbers, Lisa. We set the scheme
But it'd
up
be millions, wouldn't it?
We set the scheme up on a criteria basis, so I don't have the dollar figure.
Okay, so given the vaccination rates for Tairawhiti at the time this insurance policy was announced, was the gamble really worth it? Because the odds were against you.
Well, it's not a gamble. It's a matter of making sure that we provide support to people in an environment of uncertainty like this. The event sector and us have been talking for some time about what we could do to enable people to be able to carry on with their planning when they were feeling so uncertain, with some security that some of their costs that they couldn't avoid if they had to cancel were met. And so it's not a matter of a gamble. It was a scheme we designed to make sure that we could provide support to the event sector.
Just so we know, over Christmas, what could prompt a localised lockdown, which is still on the cards?
Well, it is, although, you know, as we've tried to reinforce, we don't see that as particularly likely. A localised lockdown would be if we had an outbreak which we simply felt we could not control in an area. We believe that the settings we've got act as a good control, but we do have to have a backstop. One thing to remember about them is that they would be very much localised in the sense that they would be around a particular area where there was a particular outbreak that we didn't feel we could control. But as I say, they're well down our list of the way that we'll be managing things.
Understand, but given the fact that people will be moving around the country, may not be at home, are you going to give people enough time to get home if you were going to have to go into a localised lockdown?
Yeah, look, as we have done in the past, I'm sure we'll manage that. We've done that with when we've had other forms of lockdown. Slightly different situation if you find yourself in a situation where you've got the virus yourself, and there are obviously public health guidance about staying in place and so on, if that is the right health setting. But in terms of being able to travel and so on, bear in mind there are currently no borders per se. If a localised lockdown were to occur, I'm sure we'd deal with it the way we have lockdowns in the past.
Thanks for joining us this evening. That is Grant Robertson, the Deputy Prime Minister.